Hi, today's April 29th, 2018. This is Mobile Views Podcast 202. Tata Gossamore, my good friend John Westfall. Got a mishmash of stuff, plus a big news item that I think John and I are going to not rant about, but we have some opinions.
Yep.
First, a couple of things. A new app. Well, not really a new app. Yeah, I guess a new instance of an app and two, let's call them retro apps, were updated. Yep. So the newish one is good. There's a Google Tasks app for iOS and Android now. And it's okay. You know, the nice thing about it is it's integrated into Google Calendar and I think Mail too. So if you use it there, I've used it in a couple of times. I might start using it now. There's a separate app. I don't know, John. What about you?
You know, I've bounced around with to-do and task apps for a while the last few years. I started off years ago on ToodleDo, which has a lot of features, but hasn't updated their UI in about 10 years, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved over to a couple of different, you know, things like Wunderlist and Todoist and all that. I tried those out. And then recently I was just on Microsoft Exchange tasks, you know, just in Outlook. Problem was, I could never find something that would let me kind of customize and get the exact views I wanted. So I went back last week to an app that I used about a year ago called ToDo, the number two and then D-O, which is a Mac OS, iOS only app and Android. It works really well. It just doesn't have a Windows client or a way to edit my tasks from Windows, which is the only big negative to it. But it speaks to the idea that these to-do apps and tasks apps, if you're doing anything more complex than just a simple check-off at the end of the day sort of list, a lot of the free ones out there just don't really have you covered for that.
Yeah, there used to be one that was really popular for a while called Remember to Milk. I don't know if you remember Remember to Milk. Not quite sure whatever happened to it. I think it's still around, but it's got no buzz anymore for whatever reason.
And it's the same thing with ToodleDo. ToodleDo came out about the same time, and they're still around, but their UI is not as friendly as I think it could be. And it looks very dated. Even their refresh from a few years ago looks kind of dated.
Right.
And it's sort of for people who have a need that's between simple to-do list and full-blown project management software, it's hard to find sometimes that middle-of-the-road option. That's why I think a lot of the paper planners are becoming so popular now. I see ads for I don't know if you see these on Facebook as much as I do, but Michael Hyatt, who used to be the chairman of Thomas Nelson Publishing, and then he made a name for himself in the blog world, now he's out there hawking this paper planner that you buy a subscription to, and they send you these planners every quarter, and it's, you know, comprehensive task lists and hot list, what you need done today, the most three important things, all those sorts of things. It seems like there is a group out there that are productivity mavens that really want a complex task management system.
Whatever happened to Franklin planners? You know, the Franklin Covey thing? They're super hot for, I don't know, I guess in the pre-computer days, really.
Yeah, I think these are the next iteration of that.
Yeah. You should do cognitive psychology study on, you know, the to-do
of to-dos.
Oh, there are so many
things I could do studies on. I have to add that to my list, pun intended.
Yeah, but, you know, it's kind of interesting. You mentioned the paper thing. I've tried a combination of paper things, you know, the Evernote, Moleskine notebook, and I had a pen. One of those digital pens where you had special newly marked paper and you write it on. I used that for a couple of years about a decade ago. And none of them seemed to took. You know, this is right around the time where the GTD, you know, getting things done movement was in full swing. And I just decided that getting things done was just too darn hard to get things done with.
Well, it's ironic. 2 points to speak of that. First, I administer a program that gives every student that comes into it a paper planner and encourages them to use it. And I did do that last year. I used the paper planner a little bit more than I was expecting, and I found it somewhat useful. And this year, I just didn't pick up the habit again, although I might next year.
Yeah. And I don't use a planner, but, you know, at work, I do keep a stenographer's notepad right by my phone because, quite honestly, it is faster to pick up a pen and scribble a note to myself on a piece of paper than it is to bring up some app and type into it.
Yeah, I agree. I've got both of my offices. I have sticky notepads next to, where I can just scrawl out something. I think it's interesting. The only thing from getting things done that I ever did take was the idea, if it takes less than 2 minutes, just do it. That has been a phenomenally good productivity suggestion for me over the last number of years. But everything else on getting things done as well, I didn't think was helping me actually get things done.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to be very dedicated. I was going to use another word, but it's probably not safe for work. So. Next up are two items which I call, what should I call them? Jurassic software? You know, I used to do a Jurassic technology blog. But at any rate, number one is there is an update to NetHack. I don't know if you ever played that game, John, but I was addicted to it for a while.
I have never played it. What is the point of the game?
So NetHack is kind of a multiplayer Dungeons & Dragons game. It is all ASCII, or at least it was the last time I looked. Mm-hmm. And so in the old days, you would fire it up on a, you know, like a Unix, a multi-user Unix box at your university. You would sneak it on and install it. I was a system administrator, so I didn't have to sneak it on. I just installed it. And people could play either as a singleton or there was like a multi-user version. And it was just way fun, you know. So a grid would slowly emerge on your screen as you wander through the maze. And you would go through multiple levels. And, you know, it's kind of an adventure game, except with some minimal, like I said, ASCII graphics. It was really a lot of fun. And any rate. Version 3.6.1 was released, and the interesting thing about it is the first release, July 1987, so it is 31 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, and you think about it, you know, you think about software that was released in 1987, not many things are around. You know, there's Windows, there's Mac OS, and those aren't apps, right? Those are operating systems. There's, what do you think about actual applications? Lotus 123, gone. WordStar, gone. You know.
There are probably small apps in the Unix universe that are still around.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of apps in the Unix universe that survive forever. But it's amazing that this game, which, you know, a kid looking at it today would probably just sniff at it and turn away. But it was way fun. Anyway, NetHack 3.6.1 released. I have a link to the Google Groups forum for it. And you can go take a look and download it if you like and install it, and it's way fun. I should see if there's a version compiled for the iPad. It'd be probably a lot of fun in case Civilization Revolution ever disappears from my iPad. If I accidentally upgrade to iOS 11. Oh, by the way, I'm still on iOS 10.
Keep fighting the good fight.
I have one iPad Pro just for playing Civilization Revolution. I have another iPad Pro for everything else.
First world problems.
Yeah, hey, you know, you got to have priorities in life. Next up, another, not quite as old, but pretty darn old, and that's GIMP, Graphic Image Manipulation Program, if I recall correctly. So GIMP is an open source graphics editor, some people liking it to Photoshop. I don't know, I've never used Photoshop, believe it or not, but it used to be kind of complex and had a weird windowing scheme with multiple windows for each menu. You could have the instance where, you know, part of your UI was hidden behind another window because you forgot and you can't remember where your, like, your color menu. Anyway, GIMP 2.10.0 released. It was first released November 1995, so it is, what, 23 years old now? And again, you know, you go back to 1995, what the heck was released back then? And I don't know, Internet Explorer maybe? Something like that?
Office? The first kind of unified Office, you know, interface.
Yeah.
Because Office have been around, but Office 95, you could argue, was the first real coming out of Microsoft Office as a suite.
Right, right. They had individual components. Like, you could buy Microsoft Word back in the mid-80s, I think.
Yeah.
But it was not as part of a suite. Yeah, so, you know, a lot of stuff. Oh, Civilization Revolution. Actually, it wasn't called Revolution. It's called Sid Meier's Civilization. It was released, I don't know.
It was 90s. Too old for a revolution. It was just the original thing, you know?
Yeah, it was just the original Civilization. Yeah. Anyway, 2.10.0, I used to use it on Mac, believe it or not, because I was like too poor to buy Photoshop. So
today, if you have GIMP and Inkscape, which is an open-source vector imaging tool, and you like those, you can accomplish everything you would with Adobe Photoshop and Illustrator.
And save yourself a whole bunch of money.
Exactly. And I recently used Inkscape again for the first time in a few years.
Yeah.
was very impressed at how polished it's become and how useful on both Windows and Mac it's become. So if you need to do anything with vector graphics, if you're preparing files for a third-party publisher and they say they want Illustrator, go for Inkscape. I've been very happy with it, and you get that with GIMP, and you've got pretty much every image editing task on Mac that you need done. On Windows, I might prefer Paint.net over GIMP.
But good point. I like Paint.net.
Inkscape's nice on both platforms. Yeah.
And, of course, Linux, you know, where it comes from.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, practically nothing's available from the commercial side of the world. You know, we should do a podcast episode one day about some of our favorite open source and freeware tools. I think that'd be interesting.
Yeah, we need to do a whole podcast on poor man's operations, you know, basically how to... I was meeting with someone this week, and they were asking me how I did something, and I said I used Google Sites for it.
Right.
And they said, oh, and what was the cost of that? I said, zero. And they looked at me and said, that's the right answer.
Yeah, there are a lot of things, Barrett Strong wrote, the song Money is the best things in life are free. But anyway, and there are some pretty good things in life that are free. So we should let's do an episode in the next week or two. Talk about some of our favorite. In fact, we may have a series to talk about. There's a whole bunch of stuff that I use a lot. Okay. Next thing, I didn't even read this blog. So in Microsoft Windows, right? Blogs.windows.com. Talks about the new Windows 10 features, and I kind of scrolled through it, and my eyes glazed over, and I just said to myself, do I even care? And I didn't read it. I don't know, John, did you?
I took a look, and nothing seemed really all that great. It didn't seem like there was something I was going to rush out and try to cause my Surface Pro to update immediately so that I could get it or anything like that, yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, so we don't care. But, to be honest, I really don't care about macOS updates anymore either. I mean, I get them when they come out, but I really don't pore through the release notes or whatever they're called and see what's new and wonderful. It's like, it already does what I want to do. It's already wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the next item is the one I think we may spend some time on. I don't know. So this morning I saw we've been hearing about this for like weeks and months, but this morning I saw on, I think CNN that, well, I should say CNN.com. I don't actually watch TV. CNN.com. That Sprint and T-Mobile are merging finally. I mean, they've been talking about this for years. They've tried, this is the third try, I think. So this kind of affects me because I'm a Google Fi user, which does roaming from T-Mobile and to Sprint and back, and also US West or US Cellular, whatever the heck they're called. But we don't have them here, so it doesn't do me much good. But I'm not sure if it's going to have a negative or positive effect. I mean, if part of the merger agreement is that one or more of them has to give up cell sites, which has happened in the past, it's actually going to make my cell coverage worse. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, John, your thoughts?
The first thing that came to mind when thinking about this was what are the most alluring things to consumers about the three that will emerge? Because with the four, you kind of had these little, at some point one would have a better advantage in there. But when you got down to three, I'm thinking there's, when people say, well, why would I go with Verizon? Why would I go with T-Mobile? Why would I go with AT&T? And I would tell someone in a post-merger world, well, go with Verizon if you travel a lot and you need coverage absolutely everywhere. If it's your only device and you really can't stand to be out of coverage, you're going to pay more, in many cases a lot more, but that's what Verizon will give you. Mm. Your data speeds will be reasonable. They won't be the fastest on the planet. They also won't be slow. T-Mobile? You're going to get more value. You're going to have fastest speeds in some cases while in the right areas. You're not going to have all the same coverage. There's going to be places where you'll have dead spots. But if you live in an urban area and you want to pay the least amount of money and be on a national carrier, I was on T-Mobile for 9 years myself before I switched to Verizon. Not a bad option there. AT&T, if you like bundling things,
yeah,
that's really the only thing I can think of that would be of interest to consumers is if they have DirecTV and they want to kind of get a deal with bundling certain things, bundling home and DirecTV and all that. I really AT&T at one point had more innovative hardware. Back in the 2000s, there were things that only came to AT&T. Verizon never really jumped on that, although they did have the Kin. You know, Verizon.
Oh, yeah. That was a winner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But today, that's the thing that kind of vexes me. I can't really think of a great compelling case for AT&T.
Yeah. Well, you know, Sprint is currently the slowest of the big four national carriers. If they merge with T-Mobile, I guess the end average, you know, T-Mobile's the fastest, they're the slowest. Sprint will be, you know, not as bad overall, or the combined company. So that will mean AT&T will have the distinction of being the slowest national carrier in the nation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, also, it's also U.S. owned. So that's nice, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Because, you know, Sprint is a majority owner is, I think, SoftBank in Japan. And T-Mobile's majority owner is Vodafone in Germany. So, and Verizon, no, I'm sorry, not Vodafone, T-Mobile, of course, T-Mobile, Deutsche Telekom, DT. Mm-hmm. Verizon used to have a minority owner was Vodafone. But I think Verizon bought that out a number of years ago. So they're U.S.-based now. So, well, AT&T will not exactly distinction, but at least will be U.S.-owned. That's nice, I guess.
That's something.
Yeah, hey, you know, let's go with that.
I mean, that.
That
is something. It's just not – I don't see most people I talk to seeing that as the compelling argument.
You really don't hear people saying, I'm going to go with the American-owned cellular network. but you can never tell. You know, that could be their sales thing coming up because, hey, you know, we're still American. You can never tell. I think one of the first time they tried to merge, the FCC or somebody, I think it was FCC, said, nope, can't do it. But I don't think the current political climate is going to slow them down, and I think this merger will go through. It'll be interesting to see if they have to give up any tower sites or something else mm-hmm. to allow the merger to happen. Maybe nothing. As I said, as a Google Fi user, which again uses T-Mobile, Sprint, and U.S. Cellular, for coverage or for service, I kind of wonder what that's going to mean for me. I also wonder if the combined company is going to retain T-Mobile's free international roaming.
Oh, that's true. There were some things that T-Mobile did in a effort to gain ground on the others that now they might not need as much.
Yeah. And it also makes me wonder, you know, what the role of SoftBank and T-Mobile Deutsche Telekom mm-hmm. Is going to be now. Which one is going to be the, you know, is it going to be a Japanese company? Is it going to be a German company? Or is it going to be something in between? In World War II, that would have been frightening. But I guess these days it's not so frightening. So I guess we didn't have much to say about it. It's going to happen. Might happen.
Yeah, I think it's got the best shot of happening now as it's had in the past 5 years that they've been trying to do it. So we shall see. Honestly, this would have been a much bigger deal to me 10 years ago.
Yeah, for sure. Because that was when T-Mobile wasn't very fast and had a really tiny network. Mm-hmm. So this would have been a really yes.
And it would have brought the iPhone to T-Mobile because T-Mobile still didn't have the iPhone 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It would have brought Sprint still had their iDEN network.
Which used to be Nextel. The Nextel stuff, yeah.
That could have been kind of cool to see that integrated in. Then they sunset that. So it probably was more interesting 10 years ago. Today, you know, I think it's not as interesting.
Yeah, I have to say, I want to thank Sprint for finally getting rid of their push-to-talk iDEN network a number of years ago. Because that was the most... I never used it. But I don't even know people who use it, but I know of people who use it in the sense that I would see them on the streets screaming at their top of the lungs, holding their phone in front of their face instead of near their face, and using it in walkie-talkie mode. And basically, it's, you know, I learned much more about people's hemorrhoids and other problems than I really would have cared to learn, and it was all because of iDEN. And I thank them for getting rid of that stupid thing.
It was an interesting idea, though, and I think there's still a need sometimes for a walkie-talkie-esque mode of communication. I know that it would be faster in work sites where it would be useful, but the general public walking down the street, it's not the most useful there.
Yeah, you know, the only place where you walkie-talkie type situation I think makes sense is when you need to do a one-to-many broadcast. to mm-hmm. a defined group of people, like you said, on a work site, maybe a construction site, or, you know, any place where there's a bunch of people in close but not close enough proximity that you need to come in, like, hey, you know, there's a truck coming on the road and we need to do this, that, and the other thing, or whatever. Or, you know, hey, we're in the field and we need to find this thing. You know, you're like, you're, I don't know, a surveying engineer or something. And, you know, you're spreading out four or five people in your group to try to, you know, identify the locations of various things. Sure, I can see that. But other than that, no, it's just an annoyance factor. It has no functional value. okay, so you've got something.
I have an interesting thing that that struck me this week. I've mentioned a few times that this spring my project that I took up, the thing I figured would be more useful than, say, learning a game that I would get disillusioned with by this time and drop, because that's what I've done in the past. I got really good at Tiger Woods Golf at one point on my iPhone, and Family Guy's little game, I got really good at that. And then I thought, this year I'm going to do something more useful. So I took up knitting, and last week, after our podcast, I actually sat down and started on a little teddy bear that I made for my godson. And that actually, I did most of it Sunday and then finished it up Monday.
Nice.
And I thought about, why is knitting interesting to me? And I realized knitting is basically literal programming in your hands, putting together statements upon statements and rows upon row, and then you're basically executing the code as it comes forth. So that's, if someone's ever wondered and thought, why would I ever want to get into that? It seems way too artsy and way too antiquated. If you just like if the thrill of programming for you was, I get this end product and I kind of saw it all the way through and saw everything coming to fruition with it, that is one thing that you get with knitting and crocheting and other sorts of crafts, where you come up with a product at the end that you can give to someone or someone can enjoy. And I got, in return, I did send this little teddy bear on Wednesday to my godson and got a video on Friday of him opening it.
Oh, nice.
And becoming very disillusioned and screaming that it wasn't anything interesting when he finally saw it. Well, about 2 minutes later, I got a text going, he screamed when he saw it, and now he won't stop carrying it around. So I think he basically just needed a few minutes to warm up to it. But I will say, I've never had someone take something I've made and scream at the camera in annoyance to it and then start liking it later. So I've got a wonderful video for when he's older. Two-year-olds are like that,
though. Yeah, you know, knowing how people are, I'm sure there's some software you developed that you thought was perfectly fine. The end user went, what the?
That's probably very true.
We just don't have a video of it. So how old is he?
He is 2.5. He'll be 3 in December.
So. Okay, so that's about the age where they're more interested in the box something comes in than the thing in the box itself. So.
Exactly. Yeah. I know it will not be. I had no disillusionment at all when I saw the video. I thought it was a hilarious video to him. So.
Okay, we need
to. Yeah.
I hope you took a picture of this thing. We need a picture of this thing.
Oh, I do have one.
Okay. Now, while you were talking about that, I looked it up. And it turns out, yep, there are ports of NetHack for both Android and iOS. They're both free. The NetHack one is apparently the original code, recompiled for Android, or somehow, or at least ported to Android. And like I said, it's free, NetHack. And then there's something called iNetHack 2, which has 4.5 star ratings with 38 people. It looks like it's free. Does it have any? I don't see any like in-app buying or anything. But anyway, it looks pretty close. Actually, it's not ASCII. That's the only thing that's different. Actually, neither of them are ASCII. They're both actually a kind of graphic-y looking thing, which is kind of disconcerting. not to see an ASCII interface. But there you go. They're free. And, I'm looking at John's knitted bear. Very nice, John. I should ask you. I should finish ranting on saying the same thing three times. Anyway, so NetHack, iOS and Android, both free. I'm going to try it. I'm going to download it, you know, in case Civilization stops working. And mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, John, so did you ever start doing anything with your Apple Pencil after downloading software, or you decided knitting was more interesting?
I have here and there. I actually had a calligraphy app that I was playing with for a while.
I've never tried that.
That was kind of fun to do. And I've been using my Apple Pencil just a lot in general. I do use it at least once or twice a week for an hour or two in either a meeting or... So my Apple Pencil gets a good amount of use, but I was thinking about that today. I was thinking, or this week, I was thinking about how my handwriting is pretty horrible, because it just is. I never had great penmanship.
Yeah, me too.
And, you know, when you have doctor in front of your name, it's kind of expected that you have horrible penmanship. But I thought about, is there an app that is kind of geared toward adults that would let them practice penmanship? And I looked for it, and there really isn't. If you want to learn how to write or practice writing, unless you're going for a calligraphy app, and there are some of those, you can't really find a app that just lets you practice cursive writing or something like that that's geared toward adults. There are many that are geared toward kids. Children, but
well, what's wrong with the one for kids?
That's a good question. Maybe I need something more boring, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, so and on the productivity side of the world, what apps have you found useful with the Apple Pencil? Because I don't use mine for productivity.
Ironically, Microsoft Office apps.
Really?
I have this a little bit with the Surface Pen and Surface Tablet, but then it was never all that perfect. But I use the Apple Pencil quite a bit when sitting in a meeting marking up, you know, a document where people are saying, oh, maybe if we move this here or if we move that there, it's a lot quicker for me to draw and move and things like that. And then when I get back to my desk and I open it on my computer, all my annotations are there. I can then make all the changes and delete out the ink as I go. And also, it's unexpectedly not just useful in Word, but also Excel. So now, being able to mark up an Excel workbook sometimes can be very useful, too.
Can you go beyond markup? Can you do things like actually have – the software, Microsoft Word, do stuff like handwriting recognition?
I don't think so. I've never seen it do any kind of handwriting recognition, although that would be useful. But I tend to have two modes of using my iPad Pro, either with the keyboard, the smart keyboard, and then I'm usually not using the pencil or using the pencil. Yeah. So if I'm doing editing on a document, minor editing, I might just use the keyboard and actually make the changes right then and there in the room with someone.
Right.
And it's all synced up through OneDrive. But if it's a more intense, oh, let's move this or let's change this or let's strike this or something like that, then I'll use the pencil because that's just quicker as you're talking through a document.
Yeah, because, you know, I was under the impression that the Apple Pencil was supported by Apple's iWorks suite, Pages and whatever the heck the other stuff is called, Sheets. But I thought I read that. When I tried it, it didn't work. So maybe I'm doing it wrong. I don't really use the app, so, you know, it's very likely I did something not correct or whatever. Okay, well, kind of a short podcast, but not that short, 29, 30 minutes. So
that's our usual.
Yeah. So, at any rate, thank you, John. And maybe next time let's think about talking about some of our favorite freeware and open source applications, either for the desktop or mobile.
Sounds good. Yeah. I'm up for that.
Yeah, and freeware is okay, too, so... You know, like paint.net is not open source, but it is freeware. So, in fact, and there's a paid version now, which I paid for because just as a way to say thank you to the developer for all the free versions over the years. Mm-hmm. Okay, John, we will talk to you next time. And let's see if I can actually find my. There we go. All righty.